Welcome back to Pax Europiana, the podcast about peace in Europe and about the EU days. Today, I would like to talk about the 20th of February, one of the most terrible days in recent European history, and it's the day of the Maidan massacre. It was a real massacre on that day. It was committed by trained military special forces of Ukraine, possibly with help of Russia. And it was a terrible deed, yeah? Because after everything that already happened, which was terrible enough, then basically to treat their own population as an enemy army and to subdue them with snipers is a terrible crime. It's this kind of crime which cannot be forgiven ever, because this is really unprecedented in, I think, outside of war, to shoot on unarmed civilians in protest. You know? Of course, you know, blood was already spilled on the 18th, no doubt, yeah? And this was violent protests, there's no doubt about it, yeah? On both sides. But there is a difference, you know, there's different escalation levels, and this is very important to understand, yeah? And in that moment, then to use such kind of specialists, which are only a tool of war in enemy territory, and this, you call it snipers, but what in fact they are is basically extremely well-trained specialists in destruction behind the enemy line in the tradition of the Soviet Spetsnaz, or also the Americans have this kind of specialist, most famous obviously Rambo, but this kind of specialist you drop behind enemy lines and they are bent on mass destruction, targeted killing, and they are instrument of war. And never, in no way, you can release them on your own population. That is exactly, absolutely forbidden after any kind of context. And this is exactly what happened. They are definitely not a tool of a political settlement or conflict resolution. And let me now come describe the scenes. They were on the top of the buildings around this Maidan. And there were thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of people barricaded already after all the events that happened. Smoke up in the place, yeah? Some of the buildings already destroyed from the terrible night of the battle of the Maidan 2 days before. That was a battle in the night, there's no doubt. Yeah. But the odds, you know, there was riot police on the one hand, terrible and brutal, no doubt, yeah. And there were the demonstrators, already wild up and strong. And also, they had these makeshift weapons, in a way, this kind of metal shields and a lot of everything they could use for weapons, from stones to Molotov cocktails. This was definitely civil war, there is no doubt. But the response, and then on the 20th, in the morning, at the plain daylight, yeah, the rational, managed and organized state-sanctioned killing of protesters by such kind of brutal force by the state, that is really a completely different dimension. And that's basically a war crime. There's no doubt about it. Yeah, there was no war, so you cannot maybe put it to the war crime. But the responsible for that one should be definitely at the International Court against Humanity. And this is absolutely beyond anything which can be understood in the management of crowds or in the riot police. It's not riot police. It's not anti-terror measures. Yeah? And this is basically targeted killing of their own population for political reasons. What exactly the reason was, I think there was also a very bad strategy behind it. And obviously it resulted in a complete failure, because these mass killings have then led actually to the Ukrainian state basically melting away under Yanukovych on the next day. Good, but the deed itself, it may live in infamy, world, I think forever in history, that a state like that has committed such crimes is really unspeakable. And in the year 2014, I'm not talking about ancient history, I'm talking about 2040 in the European continent. And everywhere, actually, that would be unspeakable. But when we have the standards that we are Europeans and we should have learned out of our history, then I think it is especially shocking that this happened. And let me come to the context as well, because that's important to understand. First of all, I would like to explain that on the 18th to the 19th, there was the Battle of the Maidan. That was, of course, very terrible. I made a podcast about it, and also how the things have developed to that point. And there were already 25, 30 people dead before and during that Battle of the Maidan. Then on the 19th, imagine the scenery, the smoke, the destroyed buildings around the Maidan, yeah? The people fighting the whole night, the police also fighting the whole night. The kind of effort to clean the Maidan failed. Yeah? Of course, it was tried very hard, but also the resistance was very hard. Yeah? And, you know, they didn't really go to that length. Yanukovych was not ready to go down in history as the man who turned the Maidan into a Tiananmen. He also knew the Tiananmen, a role model in a way, the massacre of the communist Chinese of 89. And he didn't want to do the Tiananmen. He wanted to clean the square with riot police. Yeah? That's also legitimate in a way, yeah? There is a riot police. Every democracy has a riot police. Every democracy has also the responsibility for rule and of law and public order. So it's nothing he should be punished, or, you know, that these fightings were also very bloody and people died. You know, that was the consequence of the prior events. And I wouldn't go so far to call it a war crime. The war crime that really happened was the 20th of February. And obviously back to the 19th in the morning, when everybody was waking up again, or many people didn't sleep at all, and everybody saw in television, and many people went then, also the institutions, the leaders, I'm sure Yanukovych himself, he saw also how it looked, the Maidan on the 19th of February, like a battlefield. And it was a battle, so logically it looked like a battlefield, yeah. Still a lot of smoke, turned down, burned in vehicles, smoked up tank, this kind of armed vehicle, not a tank maybe, but you know, there was a destruction, there were barricades, there were a lot of dead people. Reports came in, and it was an international shock for everybody, because before it was not so much violence before from the 22nd of January. There was basically a month of minor violence, constant violence. A lot of mean acts were committed, yeah? But, you know, nothing like the Battle of the Maidan happened since the 22nd of January. So ultimately, this was a big shock, because a negotiated peace was already possible. Since the 25th of January, there was a basic agreement about the settlement, which didn't look very much different than what was agreed on the 21st, and it was also what then really happened ultimately, with the exception that Yanukovych ran away on the 21st. So what was the 19th situation? Obviously, everybody saw the television pictures of the whole world were full of a burning Maidan, unprecedented pictures in the year 2014, this kind of violence, parallel to the Olympic Games in Sochi. Never forget, where Putin was walking from the Austrian house to the American house, bringing all his charm up and having these 50 billion games organized just, you know, some kilometers from the Ukrainian borders away. Parallel to that, the Maidan and this obvious Russian-European, Russian-Western confrontation about the future of Ukraine, playing out in a kind of unprecedented form in the middle of Europe, in burning buildings, and so many people killed already for the Battle of the Maidan. So the situation is then, what to do then? And obviously here, everybody was then involved, you know. The whole world tried to somehow calm the situation and not have another night of bloodshed. Because, you know, that's also the task of an American president, of European policymakers, and also, in my view, of a Russian president, you know. You don't want these things to escalate so far as to go to war and to have this kind of battles in the capitals, where then political conflicts about the geostrategic trajectory are reaching such kind of climax of violence, like in the Battle of the Maidan. And everybody called, everybody was, many of them were there already, the German foreign minister, the Polish Prime Minister Tusk and also the French Foreign Minister, they probably were already scheduled. I'm not totally sure about their travel plans, but you know that it was time to settle and to go there. Maybe they went just on the 18th, on the 19th, but they were there for this negotiation coming to that moment. Yeah. So basically what on the 19th happened, and that's very important to understand, because only then you can understand what happened on the 20th. There was enormous international pressure for some kind of settlement, and there was basically a ceasefire declared on the evening of the 19th of February in the smoking ruins of the Maidan. There was a ceasefire declared, settled by between Yanukovych, the Ukrainian opposition leader, the Maidan activists, and the international community, fully present, everybody in, and also the Russians in. And everybody agreed on a ceasefire on the 19th, shocked by the events of the night before. So the night on the 19th to the 20th was comparable calm. There was no second battle of the Maidan in that sense. Yeah? There was an international effort to make a ceasefire and keep it. And this actually happened on the 19th of February. But what happened then in the night and on the 20th of February? And it's very important to understand. Obviously, also inside the Ukrainian Yanukovych government and his kind of security system, there was a form of an internal coup against Yanukovych. Because why? Because he had again agreed on a ceasefire and a compromise. Yeah? The hardliners wanted a crackdown. And Yanukovych did talk nice, talk tough, oscillate again between the one side and the other side of the extreme variations of possible responses. And he, in that sense, under massive international support, and you know, the whole world then looking at Kiev and at him, yeah, he declared a ceasefire. And that was the moment the establishment of the Ukrainian security service, possible with help of the Russian security service, I'm completely sure. Who will ever prove it? There was obviously this person, this Surkov, it's called. He was already around. But also the Russians had a 20-year kind of, and if you want, a 350-year intervention in Ukraine. And they had Ukraine to lose, because since 2010, they were in charge of the security apparatus, of the state apparatus, via their kind of instrument Yanukovych, which in their view did not deliver during the decisive days of the Euromaidan. It was Putin's idea not to sign in Vilnius. It was Putin's 15 billion he put on the table on the December Sochi summit. And it was all the time, you know, basically him propping up his tool of power, Yanukovych. And Yanukovych, in their view, did always kind of under pressure cave in and do some kind of compromise agreement, which they saw as a really terrible role model for a potential future conflict in Russia, and also their way to lose Ukraine. And that was for them, for this kind of pro-Russian elements in the security service and the Russian security services tasked to keep Ukraine and Yanukovych in power, that was unforgivable. And they didn't forgive it as well. So was it a kind of internal coup? Was it Yanukovych actually consenting to the order of these activities next day on the 20th? You know, who will ultimately have to prove it? Maybe history after 20 years will find out, after the Russian archives might be opened, and by time maybe also Ukrainian justice system can find some proofs. I don't know for sure, obviously, that all this happened exactly ordered by whom, because they won't tell it. That's quite, they want to protect their own reputation. But the most logical conclusion is that basically rogue elements from the state security service, with the backing of the Russians and under the pressure of the Russians, decided to go all in. And this was what they did. So they asked this alpha unit of the SBU, I have to explain, that's basically the successor of the KGB. In the Ukrainian version, it's called SBU. And they were still working under, and to this day, to my best knowledge, under the KGB regulations, and very much seeing themselves as a successor organization. Now maybe this has changed, but still, this is quite a real brutal form of secret service, also very much meant for the suppression of their own population. It's not the CIA, it's not the FBI, it's their own thing, and it can only be explained in the tradition of the KGB and the NKVD of the Soviet Union. And they had a very special unit. This is called Alpha Unit, and there might have been in different theories different names, but basically that's their most elite unit of coercion, and that's their kind of killers. And they put them in charge of this escalation with the intention to create mass violence on the 20th. And what they did, and they used then, and here most of the victims died in the morning of the 20th of February. In the whole 3 months of the Euromaidan and it's estimated 130 people who died, it is about half of these people died in the morning of the 20th of February. And they didn't die in any kind of police violent protesters confrontation. That was all happening on the during the battle of the 18th to the 19th. Here, about 30-35 policemen and also protesters, they died in this kind of battle, hand to hand, also with arms. There's no doubt. But it's a very different level of arms, because the one thing is policemen maybe having a handgun, but also maybe automatic rifles, but also maybe having pump guns and also riot guns with hard gummy ammunition. But it's a completely different military escalation level to have sniper arms. What I'm talking about, sniper, you have to understand, these are military instruments to kill. They are not instruments for crowd control. They are not instrument threatening in a way, for intimidation. They are instrument of destruction. And they are instrument of military targeted specific destruction in huge distances. You can shoot very far with these modern rifle weapons, and they are ultimately lethal because they fly so fast that even when you are just on a normal rifle weapon would maybe just give you a flash wound somewhere, and they are entering so fast with just a high precision and such as a velocity, they kill you at the moment of the impact. And this is what rifle weapons are, and this is what sniper weapons are. They are very lethal, and they are instrument of war, not of crowd control. They are not meant to ever to be used in a country at all, and especially not by a police force against its population. These are military weapons. And exactly that was the idea, to use them to disperse the crowd. Idea one being, maybe the Euromaidan, after having 50 people killed, and they will disperse and they will leave. But obviously the people in the Euromaidan, after 3 months of fighting, and they were quite well trained also to hide and also to go into cover. And many of them could save their lives by basically waiting out. And there was, of course, an international outcry. And you can imagine what happened when this was more or less live on global TV, that the Ukrainian state has started to execute its execution. This was a state-sanctioned execution of its civil protesters. I mean, obviously, now later, the Russian information networks tried to spin it around and somehow provide a lot of fake news and found also a lot of outlets globally who might have believed that. Yeah? But until this moment, the protesters of the Maidan had no access to nothing like similar kind of weapons. The weapons were maybe some private air pistols and maybe some hunting stuff which they found at home. But they had no kind of military-grade weapons available. This was all the state against the people. It was the most brutal form of state against the people since the end of the Yugoslavian wars and the crimes of Milosevic against the people of Kosovo and against its own people. And remind yourself, I already told the story of the panda killing, when a similar kind of elite force, this time from Yugoslavia, but they were all in a kind of similar tradition, the special forces of the Yugoslavian terror machine, and they have killed their own Serbian youth in the panda coffee. So it's not a surprise at all that this kind of alpha team, and this kind of special SBU, KGB, form of special police, they also shot some policemen. Because that's basically what they do, to somehow make it a ruse and somehow cover their field and say also the other side had weapons. Yeah? No, such kind of weapons were not in the hand of any opposition personality by that stage. They only got them once the state melted away as a response to this escalation, which in the perspective of Yanukovych and the Russians completely failed in its aspect. They killed a lot of people. In that way, it was effective. But obviously, the political impact was horrible because their most important asset, Yanukovych, their claim to legitimacy, and their victor who won in 2010 the power in Ukraine and returned Ukraine to the Russian fold, yeah, whose signature was so important in 2013, yeah, he was as well appalled by this kind of violence. Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that he didn't sanction it. Yeah, he didn't want this kind of form because it is a shame forever. It's anyhow politically. He is the man to blame because he was the president in whose name it was done. But I don't think he has ordered it. Yeah? And I'm also not sure if Putin himself ordered it, but I guess yes. Putin was still in Sochi and celebrating his kind of global sports event, the Olympics. But ultimately, I'm quite confident that without his passive approval for a further level of escalation, his kind of soldiers and Surkovs on the ground would not have felt empowered to order this kind of thing. Because understand as well, this in the military world, you do not do things without orders. Yeah, and especially you don't kill without orders. It's not that these were rogue elements of the security services shooting around out of revenge. Yeah? Anti-terror unit everywhere, but any kind of militarized kind of force, yeah, they don't develop their own agendas and they don't make, maybe for payment reasons, for financial reasons, maybe in some aspects in Yugoslavia it might have been a bit different, but again, I'm confident and sure. Let's not go too deep into the speculation. The thing is, yeah, and this kind of units, they are in a military hierarchy. They don't shoot into people as an organized team with military-grade weapons just because they feel like it. No, no, they were ordered. And they were, in their mind, in their view, they had a clear order to kill. And this clear order to kill, somebody must have approved who was in a political leadership position. It must be either the Ministry of Interior or their kind of general from the KGB, where it started, who has ultimate responsibility. Well, that's for everybody's guess. Yeah, was it Yanukovych? Was it Putin? Was it Surkov? You know, there can be a lot of theories about it, and it will be unfortunately only history to tell. And I'm sure one day, as we have seen in so many cases in the Eastern German Secret Service, we will have much more knowledge once Russian archives are open, and then people will talk in 20 years, they will make books and videos and interviews when they feel the time for their own life testimony is come, and we will know much more about it. At the moment, we are still, you know, just in the way we have to deduce the interests and the responsibilities. Yeah, ultimately, politically, obviously, it's very clear it's Yanukovych and Putin together, and they are responsible for this heinous crime. But if they really signed it off, if they really in detail did approve it, or some minor decision maker like a Ministry of Interior or a head of a Secret Service has assumed that this is in their interest and has done it as a kind of rogue element, it's also possible ultimately. It didn't change the outcome for these 53 people who were shot by military violence, by state sanctioned and state. I mean, these rifles were bought by the state. The guys were trained by the state. Yeah? They were ordered inside the state hierarchy to shoot their own people. And that's what I call a heinous crime. That's a war crime. And that shall live in infamy. But, you know, there's also one thing to understand. Why then it was not followed up by the tanks? Because when he wanted to do a Tiananmen kind of style massacre to really clear the square on the 20th, this was not happening. And here I'm pretty confident that inside the Ukrainian security apparatus, the military, the Secret Service, the Ministry of Interior, there was a faction which was basically already submitting towards Russian control. And there was one faction which said, no, we will not send the tanks. And, you know, Russia to Ukraine is quite a long time. You cannot easily transport tanks from it's about 800 kilometers from the border. So you cannot easily bring tanks from Russia. So it should have been Ukrainian tanks to do the Tiananmen-style massacre. And for that, seemingly a lot of Ukrainian generals who have sworn their oath of allegiance towards the Ukrainian constitution and the Ukrainian people, they were not ready to the great honor to send in the tanks. And then there was a lot of dismissals in and out. Yeah, people dismissed probably for disobeying the order to use ultimate violence against the protesters. Yeah. So in a way, the system, since the ceasefire of the 19th of February, in the face of the Battle of the Maidan and the terrible pictures and the reality which it created on the 19th, the state apparatus of Yanukovych power grip was crumbling already. Here you can also see the rogue elements ordering this escalation, the mainstream armed forces not obeying his orders, wherever, whoever knows if he really wanted to do the crackdown fully Tiananmen style, who can say? But definitely the tanks didn't roll. And so Yanukovych's decision to run away the next day, it was gradually getting clearer. And in the light of what happened then on the 20th, it's also important to understand how it happened then on the 21st when he signed the main agreement and when he then decided to flee. Because the level of violence and the level of this crime, he knew that he cannot run, clean his reputation from that level of heinous crime, from the massacre of the Maidan. This will always stain his reputation, and actually he should end up, like Milosevic, in the Den Haag tribunal for exactly this crime. And it is outrageous, it is heinous, it is terrible, and it is also unforgivable, I'm absolutely sure, and it is on his reputation, because ultimately he was the president at the moment it happened. Wherever it was his idea, I don't think so. Wherever it was his specific order, I actually don't think so. But politically, he is absolutely responsible for what happened on the 24th of February, and it's absolutely unforgivable. And he has turned himself into the Milosevic of Ukraine by this kind of terrible acts which he has basically allowed to happen, and at least he didn't stop it, because he was the president. He should have been able to control his security forces, not to do that. And by consenting on the 19th of a ceasefire, he made it abundantly clear that he doesn't want that on the 20th to happen, but he was no longer so much in control, it seems. And so things happened on the 20th, like these murders of 53 innocent people, because they were innocent and because it was a murder. Absolutely, it was a state-sanctioned terror act against their own population, and it shall live in infamy. And I call on all international community to make sure that Yanukovych is seeing justice for these terrible deeds on this terrible day. And that should be absolutely clear, not in Ukraine, but in Den Haag. There he should be, and absolutely he should be indicated, and he should be sentenced as well for the events of that day. The massacre of the Maidan. Never forget it. May the 20th of February live in infamy forever. And let's also think about the victims and their families and their sacrifice. And let's also think about all the people who, despite all these acts and the sorrow and the killings and all these criminal acts by the state and the snipers killing so many people on the day, they stayed in the Maidan on the 20th in the afternoon. And they were carrying on their protests, and they were not budging in the face of such brutal and heinous acts. And on the 21st, the Maidan basically was led to victory. And Yanukovych himself, he basically confessed his own guilt by running away like a thief in the night and trying in a chaotic chase to escape to Russia, the only place where he will not face justice, because the events of the 20th were co-sponsored, at least, if not completely ordered, by the Russian security services and the Russian state led by Putin. So it's no coincidence that he is now in Russia, and he will stay in Russia until there will be Russian democracy, and also the Russian public will distance itself from such heinous crimes as they were committing, so they were committed in their names on the 20th of February 2014. Good. Thanks for listening. It's complicated topics. It is European days. I will make that also different ones about economic reform and about unity. And if you have any influence, always think about it. Ultimately, the result of all these tragic ideas, events, is that we should work, and as I do, for the Ukraine, for Ukrainians to be fully in European Union, that never ever in the future something terrible like this can happen, and that they are secure as free Ukraine without Donbass and without Crimea, but inside NATO and inside the European Union with the euro, secure and prosperous. And I think that's the best way to honor the victims of that terrible day. Thanks a lot.